Chapter 4. When the elevator finally reached the roof and the doors slid open to allow her to exit, Violet Baudelaire had two reasons to be grateful that her concierge disguise included sunglasses. For one thing, the rooftop sunbathing salon was very, very bright. The morning fog, so thick when the Baudelaires arrived on Briny Beach, had disappeared, and the rays of the afternoon sun beat down on the entire city, reflecting off every shiny object, from the glistening waters of the sea, which splashed against the opposite side of the hotel, to the surface of the pond, which had settled since Violet had thrown the stone. All along the edge of the roof were large rectangular mirrors, tilted like the hotel itself, catching the blinding light of the afternoon sun and bouncing it onto the skin of the sunbathing guests. 10 sunbathers, their bare skin coated in thick, sticky lotion, lay without moving on shiny mats arranged around a heated swimming pool, which was so warm that clouds of steam were floating up from the surface. In a corner was an attendant, his eyes covered in green sunglasses and his body covered in a long, baggy robe. He was holding 2 enormous spatulas, such as might be used to flip pancakes, and from time to time he would reach out with a spatula and flip over one of the sunbathers, so that their bellies and backs would be the same shade of brown. The spatulas, like the mirrors and the mats and the pool, reflected the light of the sun, and Violet was glad her eyes were shielded. But there was another reason the eldest Baudelaire was grateful for the sunglasses, and it had to do with the person who was waiting impatiently by the doors to the elevator. This person was also wearing sunglasses, although these were much more unusual. Instead of lenses, there were 2 large cones sticking out from the eyes, getting wider and wider until they stopped as wide as dinner plates, several feet in front of the person's face. Such a pair of glasses might have concealed the identity of the person who was wearing them, but they were so ridiculous that Violet knew there could be only one person so obsessed with being fashionable that she would wear such ridiculous eyewear, and Violet was grateful that her own identity was concealed.
"You are at last," said Esme Squalor. "I thought I'd never see you here."
"Pardon me?" Violet asked nervously.
"Are you deaf, concierge?"
Esme demanded. Her scornful frown was lined with silver lipstick, as if she had been drinking molten metal, and she pointed an accusing finger with a long silver nail. The nails had been filed into individual shapes, so that each hand spelled Esme, with the thumbnail carved into the familiar symbol of an eye. The letters were painted to match Esme's sandals, which had long frilly straps that ran around and around the notorious girlfriend's bare legs like centipedes. The rest of Esme's outfit, I regret to say, consisted of 3 large leaves of lettuce, attached to her body with tape. If you have ever seen the bathing garment known as the bikini, then you can guess where these pieces of lettuce were attached, and if you cannot guess, then I advise you to ask someone of your acquaintance who is not as squeamish as I am about discussing the bodies of villainous women.
"Glamorous people like myself don't have time to be nice to the deaf," she snarled. "I rang the concierge bell more than 2 minutes ago, and I've been waiting the entire time."
"I can see the headline now," crowed another voice. "Unbelievably glamorous and beautiful woman complains about hotel service. Wait until the readers of the Daily Punctilio see that."
Violet was so relieved not to be recognized that she hadn't noticed who was standing next to Count Olaf's treacherous girlfriend. Geraldine Julien was the irresponsible journalist who had printed so many lies about the Baudelaires, and she wasn't happy to see that the reporter had become one of Esme's sycophants, a word which here means people who enjoy flattering people who enjoy being flattered.
"I'm sorry, ma'am,"
Violet said, in as professional a tone as she could muster.
"The concierge, are particularly busy today. What is it you require?
It's not what I require, Esme said. It's what the adorable little girl in the pool requires.
I'm not an adorable little girl.
Yet another familiar voice came from the direction of the heated pool, and Violet turned to see Carmelita Spatz, a spoiled and unpleasant child the Baudelaires had first encountered at boarding school, who had gone on to join Count Olaf and Esme Squalor in performing treacherous deeds.
I'm a ball-playing cowboy superhero soldier pirate, she cried, emerging from a cloud of steam.
She was wearing an outfit as ridiculous as Esme's, though thankfully it wasn't as revealing. She had on a bright blue jacket, covered with shiny medals, such as are given to people for military service, which was unbuttoned to reveal a white shirt that proclaimed the name of a sports team in curly blue letters. Stapled to the back of her jacket was a long blue cape, and on her feet were a pair of bright blue boots with spurs, which are tiny wheels of spikes used to urge animals to move more quickly than they might otherwise prefer. She had a blue patch covering one of her eyes, and on her head was a blue triangular hat with a skull and crossbones printed on it, the symbol that pirates use while prowling the high seas. Carmelita Spatz, of course, was not on the high seas, but had managed to drag a large wooden boat to the rooftop sunbathing salon so she could prowl a high swimming pool. On the bow of the boat was an ornately carved figurehead, a word which here means wooden statue of an octopus attacking a man in a diving suit. And there was a tall mast stretching up toward the sky, which held a billowing sail that had the insignia of an eye, matching the one on Count Olaf's ankle. The eldest Baudelaire stared for a moment at this hideous figurehead, but then turned her attention to Carmelita. The last time Violet had seen the unpleasant captain of this boat, she was dressed all in pink, and was announcing herself as a tap-dancing ballerina fairy princess veterinarian. But the eldest Baudelaire could hardly say whether being a ball-playing cowboy superhero soldier pirate was better or worse.
"Of course you are, darling," purred Esme, and turned to Geraldine Julien with a smile one mother might give another at a playground. "Carmelita has been a tomboy lately," she said, using an insulting term inflicted on girls whose behavior some people find unusual. "I'm sure your daughter will grow out of it," Geraldine replied, who, as usual, was speaking into a microphone. "Carmelita Spatz is not my daughter," Esme said haughtily. "I'd no sooner have children of my own than I would wear modest clothing." "I thought you adopted three orphans," Geraldine said. "When it was in," Esme hurriedly added, using her usual word for fashionable, "but orphans are out now." "Then what's in?" asked Geraldine breathlessly. "Planning cocktail parties in hotels, of course," crowed Esme. "Why else would I let a ridiculous woman like yourself interview me?"
"How wonderful!"
cried Geraldine, who appeared not to realize she had just been insulted. "I can see the headline now. Esme Squalor, the most glamorous person ever. Wait until the readers of the Daily Punctilio see that, when they read about your career as an actress, financial advisor, girlfriend, and cocktail party hostess. They'll get so excited that some of them will probably have heart attacks."
"I hope so," Esme said. "I'm sure my readers will want to know all about your stylish outfit," Geraldine said, holding her microphone under Esme's chin. "Will you tell us something about those unusual glasses you're wearing?"
"They're sunoculars," Esme said, patting her strange eyewear. "They're a combination of sunglasses and binoculars. They're very in. And this way I can watch the skies without getting the sun in my eyes, or the moon, if something should happen to arrive at night."
"Why would you want to watch the skies?"
Geraldine asked curiously. Esme frowned, and Violet could tell that the stylish woman had let something slip, a phrase which here means said something she wished she hadn't.
Because bird-watching is very in, she said unconvincingly,
a word which here means clearly telling a lie.
Wait until the readers of the Daily Punctilio hear that,
gasped Geraldine. Will all the guests at your cocktail party be wearing sunoculars?
No matter what the guests are wearing, Esme said with a smirk, they won't be able to see the surprises we have in store for them.
What surprises?
Geraldine asked eagerly.
If I told you what they were, Esme said, they wouldn't be surprises.
Couldn't you give me a hint?
Geraldine asked.
No,
Esme said.
Not even a little one?
Geraldine asked.
No,
Esme said.
Pretty please,
Geraldine whined.
Pretty please with sugar on top.
Esme's silver-coated lips curled thoughtfully.
If I give you a hint, she said, you'll have to tell me something too.
You're a reporter, so you know all sorts of interesting information. Before I reveal my special hors d'oeuvre for Thursday's cocktail party, I want you to tell me something about a certain guest at this hotel. He's been lurking around the basement, plotting to spoil our party. His initials are J.S.
Lurking around the basement? Geraldine repeated. But J.S. is...
Esme!
Carmelita screamed from the swimming pool, interrupting at just the worst moment.
That concierge is just standing there when she's supposed to be at my beck and call. She's nothing but a cake sniffer.
Esme turned to Violet, who was used to being called a cake sniffer after all this time.
What are you waiting for? She snarled. Go get whatever that darling little girl wants.
Esme twirled around and marched away, and Violet was glad to see that the villainous girlfriend's outfit had two more lettuce leaves than had been visible from the front. The eldest Baudelaire was sorry to stop performing her flâneur errands and begin her duties as a concierge, but she stepped to the edge of the swimming pool, walking carefully on the tilted roof of the hotel and peering into the clouds of steam.
"What is it that you want, miss?"
she asked, hoping Carmelita would not recognize her voice.
A harpoon gun, of course, Carmelita said. County said that I can't be a ball-playing cowboy superhero soldier pirate without a harpoon gun.
Who's County? Geraldine asked.
Esme's boyfriend, Carmelita said. He thinks I'm the most darling, special little girl in the entire world. He said if I used my harpoon gun properly, he would teach me how to spit like a real ball-playing cowboy superhero soldier pirate.
I can see the headline now,
Geraldine said into her microphone. Ball-playing cowboy superhero soldier pirate learns to spit.
Wait until the readers of the Daily Punctilio see that.
I'll fetch you a harpoon gun, miss,
Violet promised, ducking to avoid the attendant's spatula, which was overturning a sunbathing woman.
Stop calling me miss, you cake sniffer,
Carmelita said.
I'm a ball-playing cowboy superhero soldier pirate.
Fetching objects for people who are too lazy to fetch them for themselves is never a pleasant task, particularly when the people are insulting you. But as Violet walked back to the elevator and pressed the button for it to arrive, she was not thinking about Carmelita's atrocious behaviour. She was too preoccupied, a word which here means wondering what exactly Esme Squalor and Carmelita Spatz were doing at the Hotel Denouement. The two unsavoury females knew full well about BFD and the plans for Thursday's gathering, but the eldest Baudelaire did not believe for a minute that all they were planning was a cocktail party. As the doors slid open and Violet stepped inside, she wondered why Esme was using her sunoculars to search the skies. She wondered what Carmelita wanted with a harpoon gun. She wondered how Esme knew about the impostor, J.S., who was apparently lurking around the basement of the hotel. But most of all, she wondered where Count Olaf, or as Carmelita liked to call him, County, was hiding, and what treachery he was planning. Violet was thinking so hard about her observations as a flâneur that it was only when the elevator doors shut that she remembered her errand as a concierge and realized that she had no idea where to find a harpoon gun. Harpoon guns are not part of the usual equipment provided by a hotel, and the only time Violet had seen such a device was in Esme Squalor's own hands back when she was disguised as a policewoman at the village of Foul Devotees. Even if the Hotel des Numons had thought to keep such a thing in the building, Violet could not imagine where she might find it in the Dewey Decimal System without a catalogue. She wished Klaus were with her, as the only number of the Dewey Decimal System she knew by heart was 621, which labelled her favourite section, Applied Physics. With a glum sigh, the eldest Baudelaire pressed the button for the lobby.
"You're asking me for help?"
cried either Frank or Ernest, when Violet managed to find him. The lobby of the Hotel des Numons was even more crowded than when the Baudelaires had arrived, and it took Violet a few minutes before she could find the familiar figure of the volunteer, or his villainous brother.
"I'm the one who needs help," he said. "An astonishing number of guests have arrived earlier than expected. I have no time to be a concierge helper."
"I realise that you're busy, sir," Violet said. She knew that calling a person sir can often help you get what you want, unless, of course, the person is a woman. "A guest has requested a harpoon gun, and I don't know where to find one. I wish the Hotel des Numons had a catalogue."
"You shouldn't need a catalogue," the manager said. "Not if you're who I think you are."
Violet gasped, and either Frank or Ernest took one step closer to her.
"Are you?"
he asked.
"Are you who I think you are?"
Violet blinked behind her sunglasses. There are people in this world who say that silence is golden, which simply means that they prefer a calm and peaceful hush to the noise and clatter of the world. There is nothing wrong with such a preference, but sadly there are times when a calm and peaceful hush is simply not possible. If you are watching the sun set, for instance, silence may permit you to be alone with your thoughts as you gaze at the darkening landscape, but it may be necessary to make a loud noise to scare off any grisly bears that may be approaching. If you are riding in a taxi, you might prefer silence, so you can study your map in peace, but the occasion may require you to shout, "Please turn around! I think they've driven through those hedges!" And if you have lost a loved one, as the Baudelaires did on the fateful day of a fire, you may wish very dearly for a long period of silence, so you and your siblings can contemplate your puzzling and woeful situation. But you may find yourself tossed from one dangerous situation to another, and another, and another, so that you begin to think you will never find yourself in a calm and peaceful hush. As Violet stood in the lobby, she wanted nothing more than to be silent, so that she might further observe the man standing next to her and discover if he was a volunteer to whom she could say, "Yes, I'm Violet Baudelaire," or a villain to whom she could say, "I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about." But she knew that she could not hope for a calm and peaceful hush in the chaos of Hotel des Numons, and so, rather than remain silent, she answered the manager's question as best she could. "Of course I'm who you think I am," she said, feeling as if she were talking in code, though in a code she did not know. "I'm a concierge."
"I see," said Frank or Ernest unfathomably. "And who is requesting the harpoon gun?"
"A young girl on the roof," Violet said.
"A young girl on the roof," the manager repeated with a sly smile. "Are you sure a harpoon gun should be given to a young girl on the roof?"
Violet did not know how to answer him, but fortunately, this appeared to be one of the times when silence is in fact golden, because at her silence, Frank or Ernest gave the eldest Baudelaire another smile and then turned on his heel, a phrase which here means turned around in a somewhat fancy manner, and beckoned Violet to follow him to a far corner of the lobby, where she saw a small door marked 121.
"This number stands for epistemology," he explained, using a word which here means theories of knowledge, and looking hurriedly around the lobby as if he were being watched. "I thought it would be a good hiding place."
Frank or Ernest took a key out of his pocket and unlocked the door, which swung open with a quiet creak, to reveal a small, bare closet. The only thing in the closet was a large, wicked-looking object with a bright red trigger and four long, sharp hooks. The eldest Baudelaire recognized it from her stay in the village of foul devotees. She knew it was a harpoon gun, a deadly device that ought not to be in the hands of anyone, let alone Carmelita Spatz. Violet did not want to touch it herself, but as the manager stood at the door gazing at her, she could think of no other choice, and carefully removed the device from the closet.
"Be very careful with this," the manager said, in an unfathomable tone. "A weapon like this should only be in the hands of the right person. I'm grateful for your assistance, concierge. Not many people have the courage to help with a scheme like this."
Violet nodded silently, and silently took the heavy weapon from Frank or Ernest's hands. In silence she walked back to the elevators, her head spinning with her mysterious observations as a flâneur and her mysterious errand as a concierge, and in silence she stood at the sliding elevator doors, wondering which manager she had spoken to and what precisely she had said to him in her coded, quiet response. But just before the elevator arrived, Violet's silence was shattered by an enormous noise. The clock in the lobby of the Hotel Dénouement is the stuff of legend, a phrase which here means very famous for being very loud. It is located in the very center of the ceiling, at the very top of the dome, and when the clock announces the hour, its bells clang throughout the entire building, making an immense, deep noise that sounds like a certain word being uttered once for each hour. At this particular moment it was 3 o'clock, and everyone in the hotel could hear the booming ring of the enormous bells of the clock, uttering the word 3 times in succession.
Wrong, wrong, wrong.
As she boarded the elevator, the harpoon gun heavy and sinister in her gloved hands, Violet Baudelaire felt as if the clock was scolding her for her efforts at solving the mysteries of the Hotel Dénouement.
Wrong.
She had tried her best to be a flâneur, but hadn't observed enough to decode the scheme of Esme Squalor and Carmelita Spatz.
Wrong.
She had tried to communicate with one of the hotel's managers, but had been unable to discover whether he was Frank or Ernest. And most wrong of all, she was now taking a deadly weapon to the rooftop sunbathing salon, where it would serve some unknown sinister purpose. With each strike of the clock, Violet felt wronger and wronger, until at last she reached her destination and stepped out of the elevator. She dearly hoped her 2 siblings had found more success in their errands, for as she walked across the roof, avoiding a spatula as it flipped the guests on their mirrored mats, until at last she could hoist the harpoon gun into Carmelita's eager and ungrateful hands, all the eldest Baudelaire could think was that everything was wrong, wrong, wrong. Thank you.